Episode 18. Oprah, watch out. It's book buzz time, and we're starting 2015 right off with Chapter 1 of my book, Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We are sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos successfully and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Wincoller. Welcome to the show. I am and will likely always be a reluctant authority in the field of conflict management. This line of work can mean a lot of different things depending upon whom you are speaking to. For myself, it means teaching what to do when faced with an emotionally charged and potentially violent incident. This wasn't a career that I was actively pursuing, at least not in the beginning. Fate has played an important role in my life. That's the opening paragraph to my book, Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management. And the first name of the chapter is called Simplify Conflict. That's what it's all about, and that's what this podcast is for. I'm so glad you came into the show, and I'm hoping you're going to enjoy it just as much as I am. What a great opportunity to take time to bring you through a nonfiction book. You know, people, they kind of get a little bit, well, frankly, repulsed by nonfiction because it could seem too sticky and too heady. So let's make it easy. Let's lead the chaos of reading nonfiction and do it together. And you will get skills out of this experience. This book is packed full of information, whether you are a professional crisis intervener, a parent, you're in a relationship, or in conflict with yourself. So let's begin with simplifying conflict. Now, I'm going to just start with telling you a little bit about the cover, and there'll be a link to this at the leadingchaospodcast.com website. But it's not going to be show notes filled with all the writings. If you want to see the show notes, essentially, you might want to download a copy of this book. It's available via ebook and in hard copy. It's in both English and Dutch. So a little background about this. I wrote originally this book back in, 2002 it came out. And back then it was a black cover and there was a stone cairn in front. And a stone cairn is something that you see on hiking trails. And it's where people place rocks on top of each other to mark the trail along the way. Of course, weather and wind, you know, it could really impact that cairn. But there's a certain grace and a certain balance that I see from that experience. And as I read my book, you'll get a little bit of history that I did quite a bit of hiking back in the day along trails. But anywho, I dig stone cairns and I love seeing the balance of it. And so the first cover I used had a certain stone cairn set up. But my book, Leading Chaos, came out in 2012, and at least the Dutch version. The English version, came out in 2010. And I wrote it in an attempt to make it universal for everyone and to bridge the unknown of conflict. So on this cover, it's a white cover this time around, and I also have a stone cairn. And if you take a peek at it, you'll be able to see it on Amazon and also at the podcast website. What I see in it is a figure. I see actually an Aikido figure standing there. Has a little kind of the person's head on the top, and the arms are swinging out. And Aikidoists wear this black, sometimes blue, almost like a pantaloon. It's what a samurai warrior will wear. And you'll see, if you think about like the Jedi warrior on Star Wars, they wear a similar, I think they actually, George Lucas or the design team use some of the elements of the samurai warrior. And Aikido is a Japanese martial art, and I am an Aikido practitioner. I actually teach Aikido, so I'm a sensei. And so I see that grace in this stone cairn. So that begins with the cover. So you might want to take a look at that. So on the cover it says, Leading Chaos, an Essential Guide to Conflict Management and Revised Edition. And so I did kind of clean this up a bit. And though, you know, the thing about writing a book, you could always, it's like a house, owning a house. There's always more work to do. So before I go further, I want to begin with who I dedicated this book to. And this is an important piece of my history. But this book is dedicated in memory of my maternal grandparents, because there's a bit of a story there. And I'll, in a not so distant podcast, I will be interviewing my mom and talking about her parents, my maternal grandparents. And I want to say I never met them, but this book is dedicated to them. And it's also dedicated for all those in crisis who are unable to help themselves. And what I mean by that is we have a responsibility as a human race to take care of each other. And part of that is helping those who do churn things up for themselves and in the world. And they wouldn't be doing that if they knew better. And that's at least my belief. So this book is dedicated to both my maternal grandparents and for the folks who can't work through conflict effectively, so that those of us who can step forward and be that guide for that time. So chapter one, there's a number of different graphs in the beginning because this book does detail a very step-by-step protocol. And I designed this based off of my experience. Chapter one brings us into the background that I brought forward in the writings of this book. Again, it is called Simplify Conflict. And on the top, there is a quote by Eleanor Roosevelt, and this really sums it up for me. What an amazing person. Her quote goes, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face." I'm going to repeat that. You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You must do the thing you think you cannot do. It's a bit of a mouthful there, isn't it? Leading chaos, for me, is looking into fear and facing it and moving forward and believing in ourselves and knowing that we could do the thing that we think we cannot do. We do it every day. And I know you are that person listening right now. You do lead chaos, whether you believe it or not. As I've said before, just finding a podcast is not so easy. So that's a little bit about going into chaos. But getting up every day and walking forward in this world, that is leading chaos. You know, if misery loves company, it would certainly prefer you to like stay in bed, not get out, and just watch the day go by. But that's not who you are. You're willing to get up, move forward, and yeah, there's going to be conflicts facing each and every one of us. And putting our head in the sand like an ostrich, it's not going to work. We're going to stand up, roll our shoulders back, take in a deep breath, breathe out and exhale. Maybe do that again. We breathe in and exhale. And breathe normally. Kind of look around and say, yeah, time to seize the day. That's what it's about. So let's talk about this little nonfiction book. I talked about my first line in my book is, I am and will likely always be a reluctant authority in the field of conflict management. And a little something about that, I'm going to give a nod of the hat to my good buddy, Lydia. She's a psychiatrist and of course, I've known her way before she became a psychiatrist. So now that she's a psychiatrist, I don't hang out with her anymore. I'm only kidding. But she's a lovely being. And she always had this joke when we spent a lot of time while she was in school. And of course, while I had been working in this field, and we'd go for hikes, long hikes out in the woods. And she would always kind of talk about Ria's tours for reluctant Jews. And it was kind of she's Jewish, Jewish. So she would, just kind of be joking about that. And, you know, the joke was that she was on it, but reluctantly on it. And, you know, frankly, that stuck with me. And it really stuck with me in terms of my work in this field of conflict management, because I am a reluctant authority on it. I've been working in this field for quite a long time. Boy, you know, I designed the response model back in 1986. So you could do the math. But in 2016, that will be, I guess that's 30 years. And I didn't always want to do this. I could have done a lot of different things, I suppose. But fate, as I said, fate has played an important role in my life. I'm going to continue on reading a little bit more of this book. And I just want you to think about that for yourself. Where is your fate and where it's leading you? And one thing fate will bring us, no matter what, is conflict. And I think we all are kind of reluctant authorities on it. I'm an authority as much as you are, because whether we want it or not, we deal with conflict every single day of our life. And we know what to do, even though we don't think so. We do know what to do. Of course, we could always build our skills. A little bit about my life. So it goes on with. The first conflict management program I took part in was at Long Lane School in Middletown, Connecticut, a minimum and maximum security facility for adolescents. The Lane, which was what we, you know, called it, which has since closed down, was a treatment and correctional program for males and females between the ages of 11 and 18. All the residents were sent there by the court system for crimes ranging from minor misdemeanors to murder. You know, I actually worked with, you know, a young guy. He was so intelligent, and he had committed murder. His mom was really being abused and pretty severely, and he committed murder. And it was such a moving experience working with this young man, because he was brilliant. And there's a lot to be said there, you know, what that all means. And I kind of wonder where he is now. That was so many years ago, nearly 30 years ago, over 30 years ago. He's a grown man now, I hope, and doing well. But I learned a lot there. As I said, all of them were sent from the court system. At that time, I was 21 years old, fresh out of college, with no background whatsoever in psychology, social work, or corrections. So that's something to think about. I've been doing this work, and I really have never taken one single psychology course, which I like to joke about with Lydia. And essentially, a lot of my life experiences got me to where I am today, and that's going back to where fate has played an important role. So all that, you know, the fact that I didn't have that, it didn't really matter. My new position as an outdoor educator in what was called the Youth Challenge Program was a dream come true for me. I was hired to manage an on-site ropes course and facilitate team-building programs for the residents. During the summer, I worked with a co-instructor taking the teens on canoe trips down the Connecticut River and on overnight backpacking trips to the Appalachian Trail in northwest Connecticut. Working so closely with young criminals dictated the need to seriously hone my skills in conflict management. Wow, did that, if ever online was more true than that, I don't know. I seriously need to hone my skills. A year after beginning this job, I was asked to participate in a new program being introduced at Long Lane called the Humane Process of Defense and Control. This was a crisis intervention program for staff members who manage potentially volatile people, and was based on a federal corrections model that emphasized physical management of volatile behavior. My former supervisor at the time was less than pleased when she found out that I had signed on while she was out on vacation. I was to become an instructor, and teaching crisis seminars was going to take a big chunk of my time away from my outdoor teaching. The administrators of our facility, Long Lane, however, were genuinely pleased to have a woman participating in the all-male instructor training program. Having a woman as a lead instructor complemented Long Lane's unwritten policy that all staff, regardless of gender, could physically intervene and manage a crisis. You know, that single thought of being a young woman, and again, I was 21 and in this group, and most of the other trainers taking this program called Humane Defense were all from corrections, and they were big guys. And so, and it really provided me an opportunity to work with a person much larger than myself and make sure that my technique was correct. So it was a great opportunity in my mind. So I'm going to continue on with my reading. It quickly became apparent to me, however, that the program was one-sided and dangerous. Now I'm talking about the Humane Process of Defense and Control, this program. Its emphasis was only on physical intervention and barely a mention of verbal de-escalation. The physical techniques used pain compliance to coerce a person to submit. Now, there's a lot of talk these days about the use of pain compliance, and, you know, for me, that's a big part of my work, to really avoid that. Without a more balanced approach towards conflict management that integrated verbal intervention and safe physical management techniques, the program was destined to fail. This I knew. Besides, I wasn't really interested in a career in corrections. What I really wanted to do was scale tall mountains and spend my time in the outdoors, hiking, biking, and rock climbing. So I quit my state job a couple years after becoming certified to teach the Humane Defense course. I became self-employed and started designing outdoor gear under my own label. And my label was and is called Tundra Equipment. I looked forward to a life far away from locked doors and angry people. Fate, though, had other plans. Within a year of pursuing my new enterprise, I was asked to work as a consultant to the state of Connecticut, the Department of Children and Families. They needed help integrating the Humane Defense Program into 5 additional facilities. These sites included acute psychiatric hospitals and residential treatment centers. Even though I disagreed with the philosophy, I signed on to what I thought would only be a temporary position. Now, I want to talk about that. I signed on because, you know, I actually got a knock on my front door by the woman working for the state, and she asked, Rhea, will you come back and do this consultation? And I was like, you know, I don't think I really want to do this. It's all physical. It impacted me. I certainly learned how to cuss like a pirate working in the adolescent facility, Long Lane, and I wanted to move away from that. I wanted to design camping equipment. But I got that knock on the door, and I was asked to come back, and I didn't really realize that that was such a major opportunity knocking on the door, but I went for it. And decided, yeah, well, you know, kind of like when you're called to service, you shouldn't turn that down. So I'll continue with my reading. Meanwhile, I began researching alternative methods of conflict management and envisioned a program emphasizing verbal de-escalation skills. At the time, I lived 10 miles from Yale University Medical Library. I'd get a day pass and read through every abstract and book I could find on the topic of crisis intervention. There wasn't much written about verbal de-escalation back in the early 80s. Crisis intervention training was just starting to be recognized as a good idea for sites that served potentially volatile people. The Humane Defense Program, after all, was considered a state-of-the-art program at the time, even though it taught no verbal de-escalation. The best part of becoming a Humane Defense instructor for me was getting introduced to Aikido. Most of the physical management techniques in the program were derived in part from this Japanese martial art. I didn't know it at the time, but fate had just locked me into a very long study of a little-known martial art that embraces joyfulness and kindness. Aikido does not use strikes or kicks to subdue an attacker. Aikidoists learn to blend with an attack. For instance, instead of blocking a punch, which requires a great deal of physical strength, you allow the hit to go through. This means, if you are on the receiving end of the punch, you have to learn how to step off to the side of the strike. The person delivering the punch will typically throw his full weight behind the hit and thus fall slightly off balance if he doesn't make contact with your body. When a person is just off center, only just a wee bit, leaning too far forward after his punch, he can be easily moved without the need for brute force. Verbal arguments are, metaphorically speaking, the same thing as blocking a punch. Loud and forceful arguments usually end with only one victor. Blocking another person, whether physically or verbally, sets up the combative dynamic. Instead of blocking another person's viewpoint, you could, figuratively, step to the side of the disagreement, just as when stepping off the line of a strike in Aikido. Practicing a non-reactive approach toward conflict reduces your chances of becoming the target of another person's anger. Such a vantage point provides breathing room for both parties to seek nonviolent alternatives for working through a dispute. So what happened for me is I was, you know, working at Long Lane. I left it after getting training in humane defense and certified, and then got asked to come back and took that opportunity, but then went and studied and tried to find, using the Yale Medical Library, really trying to find what else, what other options were there. And also, I started studying Aikido. In Aikido, the goal is to lead a dispute towards a safe conclusion and not to annihilate an attacker. I interpret the philosophy of this art as learning to see the higher self in even the angriest person. The higher self within the angry person can listen to reason, wants to be seen, not judged, and wants to feel safe. Speaking to an attacker's higher self creates an opportunity to avoid violence. It's a simple gesture, yet it is a novel technique. It takes people by surprise when you don't meet a violent interaction by becoming violent yourself. Learning to fall safely into a role is a key component of this art. Over the course of an hour-long practice, you may roll forward or fall back into a role over 100 times. Once you learn how to roll safely, being thrown across the room isn't a big deal anymore, and is actually a lot of fun. That might not sound like your cup of tea, but haven't we all experienced a physical fall or emotional fall at least once in our lives? Aikido provides the opportunity to practice getting up from a fall with a smile on your face and a readiness to take on the next challenge. Try as I may to describe Aikido, it still feels like I'm saying you can experience a Grand Canyon by standing on the rim and looking down. Rangers and seasoned hikers both know that the Grand Canyon needs to be hiked down along the trail to get a sense of the immensity of the canyon. Aikido is like the canyon. To fully appreciate what Aikido offers in the way of providing alternatives to meeting violence with greater violence, try some of the techniques mentioned in this book. I also want to just stop here, and we're going to save the rest of this, the reading, for our next podcast session. You'll see that this book is an integration of both the response model, the curriculum. It will help you take the guesswork of what to do and what to say when involved in the conflict. And it also integrates my study of Aikido. And those two really go together. Aikido informed me so much, and there's so many metaphors, and I try to add that in the book as I can without making it too overbearing for anyone. But there is so much truth in there. Aikido helps you see that higher self in yourself and in others. And when you're able to see a person not as an angry, chaotic person, but the truth of who they are, given the opportunity, I don't think anybody would be feeling so shook up and angry and emotionally upset. Nobody says, oh, I want to be angry just for the feeling of it. It's not a good feeling. Your heart is going really quickly. You're typically not making sense. You're not your rational self because you're not breathing at a normal rate of respiration. Nobody goes towards that. And leading chaos is about seeing that truth, that higher self in even the most angriest person. And Aikido is leading chaos. Now, dear listener, what I'm going to be offering for you is a free copy of this book. It's a limited time offer. It'll begin today, which is January 9th. And this offer will be from the 9th to the 16th. And you will get it by going to the leadingchaospodcast.com website, by subscribing to and putting in your email address. Anyone who subscribes then will be sent a personal email from me with the coupon code and the link to download this book. So I hope you can take advantage of it. I'm really excited to be going through the book and reading along with you. If you have any kind of questions, please make sure to send them to me directly, Ria, R-I-A, at leadingchaospodcast.com. Super excited for that. So let's do it and let's keep on leading chaos into 2015 and getting all our ducks in a row and feeling good about how we're moving through the world. This is Ria Windcaller signing off for now. Please follow this podcast via Twitter at Leading Chaos. As always, be kind, be safe, and seek the higher self in yourself and all of us. Ciao for now, my friends.